The podcast that believes you cannot take a porcupine, stick it in a barn, set it on fire, and expect to make licorice. What's shaking with Shaner? The podcast that celebrates the passion and the madness of the geek, the nerd, and often the absurd. Yay! With your host, Shakin' Shaner. Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of What's Shaking with Shaner. As always, I am your host, Shaking Shaner. Can you believe it? That's right. Can you believe it out there, everybody? What's Shaking with Shaner was first published on August 19th in 2020 last year. So yeah, we have just hit our 1 year anniversary. Holy crap, a frickin' doodle. That's right. Somebody scream out there. Started this show with the simple idea of talking about all of those subjects and things that I geek out about or really get my nerd on. And the show has really morphed over the last 12 months. And I am very thankful for all of my guests out there. So I want to thank Lisa, Ashley, Randy, Jeremy, Jim, Jeff, and my fellow podcasters, Mike from Comics in the Golden Age, and Matt from Don't Wreck Yourself. Many of my friends have also provided insights and suggestions over the past year as well, so a big shout out to Bus Matt, Jim, Dwayne, Leroy, Trish, Rot Dog, and my wife. I never could have guessed, and never would I really believed, that the reach this show has had. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about that we have listeners in over 260 cities in 20 countries on 6 continents. Yeah, that's right. 260 cities in 20 countries on 6 continents. Holy crap! That's right. This is awfully exciting. So again, thank everybody for listening. And to our new listeners in Poland, India, and Pennsylvania, welcome to Shakin' Shaner's Nerd Herd. Psycho Bob the Cat and I welcome you to the show, and we encourage everyone to head over to our website, shakenshaner.com. That's right, shakenshaner.com, no G in shaken. So you may be asking yourself, what's shaking with Shaner today? Well, yeah, hey, good on ya, because that's exactly what we do here. I've read lots of ancient mythology and folklore from several different cultures, and one of the things that have often struck me is the role that mirrors have played in a lot of different folklore. Most every home today has a mirror of some type, whether it's in the bathroom, a closet, or a hallway. Hell, even our smartphones function as a mirror by reversing the camera. But in mythology, mirrors were often associated with the supernatural and the mystical. In some stories, they were used as soul cages, and in others, they were thought to steal the soul. But before we get knee-deep in today's topic, let's check out the cult classic film that's going to be hitting the theaters this fall. That's right, they're re-releasing it this fall in theaters only. Get ready for a spinning cyclone of insanity in the new movie from WTF Films, Insanitarium! Based on the book from Dr. Stephen Haycraft, this delves into what happened and what went wrong on a school trip to the planetarium. Billy's just not the same since he came back from that school trip. Orion's belt! Orion's belt! For the love of God, Orion's belt! I told you shouldn't have built the planetarium on the old state insane asylum. Can you handle the spinning insanity of Insanitarium? By Odin's beard. Yeah, let's try that one on for size. It is absolutely chillifying. I already got my tickets to see it for September, and I know many of you will be joining me in the theaters for the insanity known as Insanitarium. In Chinese afterlife myths, those who managed to make it through the gate of demons were brought before Yama King. He would then consult his register of good and bad deeds as well as the mirror of the wicked, which would reveal unatoned sins of the soul. In Japanese mythology of the afterlife, the soul is confronted with its past deeds and misdeeds reflected back in a vast mirror in the judgment hall of Emma-O. He judges men's souls and his sister judges the souls of women. Turning to vampires and witches, in most folklore, mythology, and stories, they are not supposed to have a reflection as they have no souls. However, today in the never-replete vampire romance novels, television shows, and movies, they have no mirror reflection due to the fact of their nature being lighter than air. Okay. Because apparently we can't have soulless objects of romance, right? Well, I liked knowing they had no reflection because they had no soul, but of course that had to be changed. Thank you very much, Twilight series. Ancient Romans believed that 7 years was the time it took for a soul to regenerate or heal or renew itself. Thus, the superstition that breaking a mirror, which held a soul, led to 7 years of bad luck. So yeah, breaking a mirror and 7 years of bad luck goes all the way back to ancient Roman times in ancient mythology because it took that long for a soul to heal. And even today in many households, if a member of the family dies, they cover all mirrors to prevent the deceased's soul from being trapped. Now, if we talk about mirrors and souls being trapped, well, we have an example of a magic mirror in Snow White. The Grimm Brothers fairy tale is what we're going to be referencing, and not the Disney movies, the Huntsman movies, and absolutely not the TV series Once Upon a Time. So all of this into context, I encourage all of you to check out the Grimm Brothers Snow White from 1856, the 7th edition of their fairy tales. I'm going to have it on the website, and that's what I'm going to be referencing through today. I'm not going to read the whole story to you. Thought about it, but I decided not to. So that is what we're going to be referencing as our point going forward. So just a little sneak peek. It all starts once upon a time in midwinter when the snowflakes were falling like feathers from heaven. A queen sat sewing at her window, which had a frame of black ebony wood. As she sewed, she looked up at the snow and pricked her finger with the needle. 3 drops of blood fell into the snow. The red on the white looked so beautiful that she thought to herself, "If only I had a child as white as snow, as red as blood, and as black as the wood in this frame." Soon after, she had a little daughter who was as white as snow, as red as blood, and as black as ebony wood, and therefore they called her Little Snow White. And as soon as the child was born, the queen died. A year later, the king took himself another wife. She was a beautiful woman, but she was very proud and arrogant, and she could not stand it if anyone might surpass her in beauty. She had a magic mirror, and every morning she stood before it, looked at herself, and said, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who in this land is fairest of all?" To this the mirror answered, "You, my queen, are fairest of all." So to check out the rest of it, hey, visit our website and see this version for yourself. This fairy tale has been analyzed by so many different people and in a lot of different veins. However, I seek something a little different. I want to know whose soul is in the mirror or who provides the magic that powers this mirror. Like many of us, I always like to have a backstory to the characters as, you know, for most of us, and me especially, it'll provide just a little bit of closure on this whole Snow White mystery of whose soul is in the mirror. Snow White is a 19th century German fairy tale that was published by the Brothers Grimm in 1812 in their first edition of their collection of Grimm's fairy tales. So we can start our search for the soul in Germany. Now, while the tale was published in the 19th century, many of the tales are much older and were traditionally passed down as oral stories, and that's what the Grimm brothers set out to do. They set out to capture all of these oral traditions and put them down in writing so they wouldn't be lost. So in other words, they were just a couple of good old-fashioned nerds and geeks, kind of like the rest of us. Since these were passed down through oral stories, we really don't know how old they are, so I now have an open time frame throughout Germany's history to find this soul. Let's go back to Saxony in Germany in the late 8th century. An important part of the beliefs of the Saxons at that time was an Irmin soul, a sacred pillar-like object. It's spelled I-R-M-I-N-S-U-L, S-U-L, Irmin soul. Sacred trees were widely worshipped by the Germanic peoples, and the oldest chronicles describe an Irmin soul as a tree trunk erected in the open air. Irmin, inferred from the name Irmin soul and the tribal name Irmones, is in some scholarship presumed to have been the national god or demigod of the Saxons. It has been suggested that Irmin was probably an aspect of some other deity, most likely Woden or Odin, and this is because Irmin began to fade out of many practices and records throughout history, so they believe Irmin may have actually been Odin because he started disappearing from a lot of the records. Now, enter Charlemagne. Charlemagne was the king of the Franks from 768 and later became the first emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. During the Saxon Wars, he was relentless in his 30-year campaign to Christianize the Saxons of northern Germany. Charlemagne controlled the foreign policy and relations of Saxony and allowed them to have their own worship. In 772, Charlemagne destroyed the Irmin soul. That's right, he destroyed it. In retaliation for the destruction of the Irmin soul, the Saxon tribes devastated Frankish churches and laid siege to the Frankish court. Now there is Windekin, a leader of the Saxons. While Windekin was considered the leader of the Saxon resistance by the Franks, his exact role in military campaigns is really kind of unknown. But Windekin fled northern Germany and sought refuge with the Danish king not too long after Charlemagne destroyed the Irmin soul in 772. But in 775, Windekin returned from Denmark and continued his attacks against the Franks. Battles between the Saxons and the Franks occurred frequently, culminating in 782 with Charlemagne executing 4,500 Saxon pagan priests and nobles at the massacre of Verdun. That's right, Charlemagne, who was trying to Christianize the people, slaughtered 4,500 pagan priests and nobles. Shortly thereafter, Windekin surrendered to protect himself and his fellow Saxon nobles. Eventually, he was baptized into Christianity, with Charlemagne being his godfather. According to legend, Windekin experienced a vision that led to his conversion, and it is rumored that he was then imprisoned at a monastery and died or was executed around 808. Hey, here we go, everybody. Get ready. I am going to overly speculate and make, yeah, that's right, a few outlandish assertions. With absolutely no proof whatsoever, I'm going to try to determine whose soul is in the magic mirror in Snow White. So now that we have set this up, it's time for us to make up some shit. That's right, here we go. I do find it curious that Windekin's name translates as child of the wood, and the Irmin soul was a pillar of wood or a tree trunk. What if the demigod Irmin was being summoned by the Saxons in 772 when they were surprised by Charlemagne and his forces? Before Windekin and the Saxons could get Irmin to materialize in our plane of existence, the Irmin soul was destroyed by Charlemagne, thus trapping Irmin's essence or his soul inside the remains of the destroyed tree trunk. Windekin and the other Saxons were able to recover the remnants of the Irminsul and keep them hidden. While later, in a dream, Erman visits Windekin and explains to him that his soul is scattered in any attempts to release his essence or his soul trapped in the wood would destroy his very essence. He also explains to Windekin he is limited in power from being trapped in the shards of the tree trunk and needs to be transferred to a soul catcher so he can heal his soul over the next 7 years. I like this explanation we just made up because this also addresses the fact that Irmin did fade out of worship by the Saxons and was not found as frequently in records and in oral traditions after that point. So then let's also go ahead and say that in 782 at the massacre of Verdun, the 4,500 Saxon pagan priests were conducting a ritual to transfer Irmin from the shards of wood into a mirror or a soul catcher. This would allow them to have access to the power and godlike abilities of Irmin to continue to fight against Charlemagne. However, once this was discovered by Charlemagne, he ordered the execution of all pagan priests and nobles who participated in this ritual. The mirror was not recovered by Charlemagne and remained lost. However, given Windekin's relationship with the Danish king, as we already established, it is not hard to imagine that the mirror was smuggled to Denmark for safekeeping. Windekin was sent to the monastery for punishment. As we already established, he was converted, but was at a monastery. But let's go ahead and just assume he was being held there. And his conversion to Christianity was just all part of Charlemagne's larger effort to Christianize all of northern Germany. So now let's talk about our evil new queen from Snow White. As she was noted to have access to secret knowledge, she was aware of the existence of Irmin's soul and was able to determine that it still existed inside the mirror or the soul catcher, the soul cage, but she was unable to locate it. Now, she knew she must have this power of Irmin. She wanted that continued secret knowledge to continue her own powers and to be worshipped for her beauty and her grace. So she knew she must have it. In order to get the power of Irmin, she travels to this monastery in disguise and gains access to Windekin. She tries several times to get the information out of Windekin and finally relies on seduction. Windekin does tell her that the magic mirror is safely stored in Denmark. She then reports all of this to the monastery and to Charlemagne, letting them know that he still believes in pagan worship and he actually created an evil pagan object with the mirror. So Charlemagne, learning of this, has him executed while he is in the monastery. So now our evil queen is the only person who knows of the true location and the true nature and power of the mirror with the soul of Irmin. So our evil queen sets out for Denmark in search of the mirror and develops her plot on finding it. So she establishes herself as a local healer right outside of the castle, and she's armed with her potions, a changed appearance, as we know she can do, and a whole new persona. It's not long before she develops a reputation, and then there is an emergency, and her services are called upon by the royal court. While there, she gives one of the queen's attendants a mild poison to make her acutely ill with no real long-lasting effects. This gives our evil queen, our evil one at this point, access to the castle for 2 weeks while she pretends to tend to the ill servant. However, in vain, she is not able to locate the mirror, and all of her inquiries are met with really no answers and no explanations whatsoever. So then she decides to up the ante and increase her influence, so she quickly finds a way to discredit the existing court healer or physician and gets herself placed permanently in the castle as the royal healer and physician. And again, this is while in her changed appearance and fake persona. After several months of being in the castle and having pretty much unfettered access to everything, she finally finds the mirror. It has been bundled up and packed away in a storeroom, and nobody even really knew it was there. Based on her own power, she finally is able to activate the mirror and awaken the German demigod Irman. The knowledge of Irman astounds her, and he tells her wonderful tales of magic and that some powerful ancient texts were actually hidden away in a secret room, secret library, within the castle. Although she has what she sought, her continued access to the spells increases her powers and abilities, and she doesn't want to leave. Once she found the secret room, she has amplified all of her power, her ability to conduct magic, spells. Of course she doesn't want to leave. One day, while waiting to attend to the current queen, she witnesses an intimate moment between the king and queen. Our evil one is amazed how the king is enthralled by his current wife and the way he dotes on her, the amount of love he shows, the way he looks at her. Our evil one starts to lust after that admiration she saw the king bestow the queen. She needs that to feed her own vanity, so she then decides to make the king, the secret libraries, and the entire kingdom hers. This would provide her with a way to continue her magical conquests and secret knowledge, but mostly to feed her insatiable need to be adored, loved, and keep her vanity satisfied. She starts to slowly poison the current queen over several months so as not to arouse any suspicion. Once the current queen dies during childbirth, she leaves the castle and the royal court in disgrace. She tells them she failed to protect the queen and she must leave and vanishes. Then several months later, in her natural form, she arrives in the villages outside of the castle. Given her described beauty, it is an easy matter for her to catch the eye of the newly widowed king and influence him to fall in love with her, marry her, and make her the queen of the country. This is where all of my crazy speculation ends, as the fairy tale of Snow White then starts. So we wrap this up quickly and neatly, right? Yeah, hey, next time you watch Snow White with family and friends, be sure to mention that the magic mirror is actually powered by the trapped soul of the German demigod Irman, who became trapped due to Charlemagne destroying the Irman soul in 772 and his desire to Christianize the pagans and slaughtered 4,500 pagan priests. I'm sure once you explain all of this to your family, yeah, they're going to thank you for all of this knowledge. Oh, and by the way, you're welcome. Well, I don't know about all of you, but I certainly feel better after providing this very logical and rational explanation of the magic mirror in Snow White and that it really is powered by the demigod Irman. Before we close this one out, hey, please go to our website. As I mentioned earlier, we have the 1857 version of Snow White as published in the 7th edition of the Grimm Brothers Fairy Tales. So go check that out and you'll discover a few more things you may not have known because, of course, this has been Disney-fied so much over the years that I really want you to just take a look and discover it yourself. There are some differences between the different versions of Snow White. It was a part of the first edition of the Grimm Brothers Fairy Tales in 1812, and some of this story changed in later versions. For example, in the second edition, published in 1819, the Grimm Brothers added the statement that Snow White's mother died during childbirth and that her father remarried. Yeah, that means in the first edition, presumably the version closest to its oral sources, Snow White's jealous antagonist is actually her own mother and not a stepmother. So that was changed between the editions. In the second edition in 1819, the poisoned apple is dislodged from Snow White's mouth when a servant accidentally stumbles while carrying the coffin to the prince's castle. In the first edition, the apple is dislodged when a servant, angry for having to carry the corpse of Snow White in a coffin wherever the prince goes, gets upset and actually strikes the princess, Snow White. So yeah, for some more context on what I just explained, you got to go to the website, check out that 7th edition version from 1857, and I hope you've enjoyed everything today. I know I did. I love speculating and thinking about things. Why? Because that's the nature of what I do and the nature of this show. Join us next time as I use my geeky powers and my nerdly gifts to explore other weird topics and subjects. And until then, take care of yourselves when we continue this journey in the next episode of The Passion and the Madness of the Geek, the Nerd, and Often the Absurd. Thank you for spending your precious time with us. We always appreciate it. Thanks.